Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us this weekend, both myself and my co-host here. We're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. Spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself, and we appear here on the radio
and on
the weekends.
Your podcast.
Yeah, to be your financial advisor on the air and via podcast or however you
consume
your
media. Yes.
Yes. And there's always, it's amazing how many new apps keep coming out all the time that essentially do the same thing.
Pretty much.
I've got like three different apps that send money to other people.
Oh.
PayPal. Then PayPal is like old school now.
Oh,
Venmo.
Venmo.
I use that quite a bit.
Do you? Oh, for your kids?
That and other. I used it a couple days ago. Venmo. Send some money. It links right to your checking account.
Really?
Yeah.
I've read about that. I haven't done any of these. My wife, for the rest
do you,
of the
listening. Let me ask you this. Have you logged into your bank account on your phone?
Never.
You're kidding.
For the rest of the listeners, my wife has an accounting degree, and she was an accountant when I met her. Actually, she was a pension administrator. And she handles all of that, every part of it.
And my wife has a degree in finance.
And? Well, there's a difference between finance and accounting, though.
That is true. My wife has zero interest in financial
matters. My wife, she balances the... It's great. It's every part of it. It's perfect. She collects the money from the kids that are away at college that put things on our Amazon account. She hunts them down and gets the money out of them.
Where's their money come from?
They work during the summers.
Okay.
So she'll pay for a little bit of stuff, but if it's off the rails, she won't. If it's something that she
this is a financial program, but
but this is financial in nature. Anyway,
I have a son in college who I've encouraged him to get summer jobs, but they're these jobs that don't pay any money.
Oh, but he has a good time.
This coming summer, he's going to lead backpacking trips in Switzerland.
Oh, nice! It's good work if you can get it.
Yeah, but he's not going to make much money doing it. But I'm like, you know what? Good for you.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you have a spouse and a mortgage. Yeah, kinda, those days are going to
One of my sons is actually an interning at a hedge fund during the school year, and he may or may not stay over the summer. I don't know. But he's interning at a hedge fund. They buy distressed debt.
Well, there we go.
Which I don't know why that's called a hedge fund if you know what you're doing and you're not hedging the market.
So you can charge more money.
Is that why it's called a hedge
fund? Don't you think?
Yeah. Well, if you think about
it. It's a fee structure.
So Scott, for the listeners out there. This hedge fund, you read in the paper sometimes private equity, venture capital, or hedge fund.
They're three different things, by the way. Well, but the structures are all pretty much the same.
Very similar.
Limited partnership structure.
Yeah. Private equity and venture capital can be almost, it's where they invest in the company's lifestyle.
Ventures are new companies. Private equity tends to buy companies that already have, already in business and established and are
And hedge funds typically trade in financial instruments of some sort. Originally, they were called hedge funds because they would hedge the volatility in the stock market or another asset class, but that isn't necessarily the case anymore.
They call the group hedge funds, and the fees tend to be 2% management fee plus
a percentage of the profit.
20% of the profit once it's above a certain number, usually 8%, somewhere in that.
Well, that's a private equity mostly, but hedge funds, it's all over the board.
Yeah, but they tend to follow a similar kind of.
Yeah.
But very expensive. And matter of fact, if you look at the returns of hedge funds, look at the universe of them, they're terrible.
Well, if you look at the universe.
Correct.
Hedge funds. Hedge funds come and go all the time. They close them down. They don't work. They close them down. They start another one.
Right. And so
across time. go across
and the,
town.
And the most successful ones, you think they want your money?
They don't. They if don't, someone's no. offering you as a retail investor, which most of the listeners in our
a hedge fund,
if a hedge fund comes to you and they're trying to raise money from you, run away.
You're not
away.
Getting the best ones, tell you that.
Because
much.
The best ones are actually institutional in nature, which means that they take money from pension funds.
I was introduced to something. It was someone was developing some platform kind of for the masses to invest in these hedge fund sleeves, as small as $50,000, I think, per thing. And I said, I forget where this was. I said to the, I said, what? I said, I can only imagine the what kind of hedge fund or private equity fund.
It's taking a $50,000.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the big ones, they want big clients typically because.
They want long-term sticky clients. Yeah. They're and the best and the ones that are great, they tend to close.
Yeah.
So. Anyway. We're off topic.
But let's take calls. If you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSEN. That's 888-242-6766.
Yeah, I'd love to take your call. Really, anything financial, 888-2-HANSEN. We're in Denver, Colorado, talking with Al. Al, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, guys. First of all, love your show and your workshops.
Oh, thank you.
I have an easy life insurance question. I hope the answer is just as easy. Here are the particulars. I'm 70 years old. My wife is 68. We're both in perfect health. The life insurance is an adjustable target life insurance, which I equate to a universal policy.
Yep.
We've had it for 29 years. I'm insured for $200,000, and my wife is a rider on the policy, and she's insured for $75,000.
Okay.
The surrender value is $83,000, and the premium per month is $200.
How long have you owned this?
Yes. So we've had it for 29 years. And I don't know what to do with it.
I know. I got a great idea. I do.
Okay.
I do.
First of all, here's what happens on some of these old, particularly the ones that are adjustable like this, universal life policy. There ends up being what's called adverse selection. So the ones that end up keeping the policy in force for the remainder of their lives are the ones that cannot get insurance from a new insurance company or a new policy.
And you are in a risk pool with a bunch of other people.
Wow, okay.
So 29 years ago, I would guess 75% of those policies are no longer the ones that were written in the year you were. They say like within 3 years, half of them have
they,
lapsed.
They surrender them. They don't pay them out. They surrender. They do
people
obviously
quit
pay
paying.
Out some.
Yeah, yeah. No, most of my people cancel them.
So what is your overall net worth?
Well, we have in two 401ks around $1.7 million.
Okay.
Our house is around $900,000, but we owe $500,000 on it. But other than that, that's our only debt. We pay cash for everything
and what,
or we don't buy it.
Do you have a pension at all?
No, not at all.
So to be real frank here, so if you died tomorrow, the household expenses would be less than they are today because you're not around.
Correct.
Fair? So then there's, if you look at it from that way, be as crass as it is, there's no need for life insurance.
Do you have any money outside of your 401k?
Yes. There's a savings, you know, for the emergency
How
fund
much?
Around $100,000.
Okay. Here's what I would look, and do you own long-term care insurance?
No, not at all.
What's the minimum interest rate on this $83,000? What interest rate are they paying in this? Do you know?
It's 4.5%.
It's pretty good, but the cost of insurance is. So I would look at an asset-based, second-to-die life insurance policy.
His wife's on as a writer. It's not as...
I would surrender this. He's not going to have much tax implications, Scott.
I'd first look into what... You're not going to have much tax implications.
You're not going to have much tax implications.
Probably nothing.
So why wouldn't he buy a second-to-die life insurance policy with a long-term care benefit on it?
If he wants to, if he wants to take care of for the life insurance policy in and of itself.
You don't really need it.
Okay. Okay. And that's what we thought. You know, but 200, if I were to pass away first, to 200,000, you know, it's nice to have for my wife. And if she were to pass away first, the 75,000 that I would give wouldn't change my life any.
So
what you may do before you cancel this is get a physical.
And I would look at purchasing. They have the second to die. And I can't believe I'm saying this because if you talked to me 5 years ago.
Well, what's that have to do with the fact that he's got this policy now?
I would surrender it and use the $83,000 to make the deposit on the new contract. That's why.
Okay.
And by the way, if you think about it, you don't have $200,000 of life insurance on yourself, Al. You have $117,000 of life insurance because $83,000 of that money is yours.
That's true. Good point.
And they're giving you a high interest rate on it, but then they're charging you a fortune on your $117,000 of pure life insurance.
Which is your cost of insurance is relatively high. So
you could go and buy, if you said, I'm just concerned in the next 5 years, you could buy a 5-year term policy for $117,000 for a fraction of what you're paying.
So
in this thing.
The answer to the question is you don't really need the life insurance policy unless you had, you know, something that you knew was going to shorten your life expectancy. You should just get rid of it.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Now.
Or
what?
If there's much gain in it.
There won't be. He's had it for 29 years, and he's put $200 a month in, so that's 2,400 times 29. He's got less than $10,000 in gain in this thing.
At 4.5%, the problem is the internal cost. Even if you brought the insurance way down,
yeah,
you could. One thing you could look at before you cancel it: look at bringing how much. If you brought the, how far can you bring that insurance? Can you bring it down to $85,000
or $90,000? Right, you can lower the face value of your coverage so that you're actually not buying that $117,000 worth of insurance. You could say to him, lower my face value to $100,000, right?
Yes.
And then what happens is and they're going to say, well, this is going to turn it into a modified endowment contract, and you're going to say you don't care. Just remember that. When they say it's going to turn into a modified endowment contract, you say you don't care. And that way, you're only buying $17,000.
I mean, something could change in the future where it's disadvantageous to have a modified endowment contract versus a regular life insurance policy.
Yeah, we could get hit by lightning, too. Right?
Well, he lives in Colorado, so there's actually a higher chance. Yeah.
But now, in saying that, I'd either surrender it or bring the face down to $100,000.
Okay.
I think you should look into taking that $83,000 in value there and looking at a second-to-die life insurance policy with a long-term care rider on it.
So okay. I'm writing all this down.
Yeah, Google that. Second-to-die life insurance with a long-term care rider on it.
Okay.
And I'd play around that.
It's also called asset-based long-term care insurance.
But it's life insurance with a long-term care rider. They call it asset-based long-term care insurance.
The reason Pat's bringing it up, you already have this money earmarked for life insurance.
Exactly.
You like the concept of your wife having some money if something happens to you. You're paying for buying $117,000 life insurance that you don't need, but you could have some need, an insurable need for to help with a long-term care cost in home or whatever it might be sometime down the road.
Exactly. So appreciate the call.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. We wish you well, Al. And there's a lot of people bought those old life insurance policies, Pat, that didn't pay enough into them.
Yeah, and they blew up.
So they thought they're going to be there for the rest of their lives, and suddenly they find themselves later, and instead of $83,000 in cash value at age 70, they end up with $13,000 in cash value. And now the life insurance company sends them a note saying, oh, by the way, that $200 a month, your policy is going to run out in 4 years.
Anyway, yeah.
So your new premium, if you want this to last, is now $800 a month.
Life insurance is sold as pretty simple stuff, but it's actually fairly complicated.
Term insurance is simple.
Term insurance, but cash value life insurance, how it's sold is often displayed as really kind of simple, but there's a lot of rules and laws and moving levers that run around life insurance. Lots.
Yes. And there's a lot of people selling life insurance that don't understand all the moving levers within it.
Yeah.
1-888-2-HANSEN if you would like to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're heading to Colorado again. We're with Jeffrey. Jeffrey, you're with Hanson McLean.
Well, thank you, Scott, for taking my call. My current employer is phasing out the 401k part of our plans, where we get to choose where we want to put our money.
What?
And they're putting this into the T. Rowe Price 2030 Retirement Fund, which is TRRX on the stock exchange.
Slow.
Oh, sorry.
You work for a small company?
No, for a very large company.
They're not getting rid of all your options. They're just taking one thing you have money in and saying, if you don't change it, we're going to move that portion into the T. Rowe Price 2030, correct?
Right. And okay. You have always said to your investors on your show, avoid large cap, high return, high risk.
And that's what it is
looking at. I was looking at it on the breakdown.
It says
large cap, high risk.
You haven't heard that from us.
Yeah, what we've said is be careful with some of these tech darlings that happen to have high caps with huge price to earnings ratio.
So what this is, it's a target date fund, which are very common in 401k plans now, and for the right circumstance, I think they can work wonders. My daughter had a target date retirement plan when she did her first Roth IRA, mainly because the cost was so low to get into them. And for many people in a 401k, they make sense. There's a couple problems with them. One is there's no standard of what a 2030 target date fund looks like.
What that means is how much equities versus bonds versus large cap, mid cap, small cap.
And what are the stocks like?
Right. Right.
So how old are you?
I am 50, sir.
50 years of age.
Yeah.
And what other choices are they giving you in this?
That's it. They're moving all of my stuff I have now into that T. Rowe Price 2030. That's it.
They have to give you another choice other than the T. Rowe Price 2030.
Doesn't have that.
Well,
then it's wrong. It's wrong. You have a whole menu of things that you could put this money into.
And your employer has a fiduciary responsibility to ensure that all employees, including Jeffrey, has options available that are suitable to Jeffrey's needs. And I would argue a 2030 retirement fund for 100% of your dollars would not be necessarily a suitable investment.
Correct. So you have a big menu that somehow you're not seeing. I don't know how you're not seeing but you're not seeing it. So does this make sense? It may.
Yes, it makes perfect sense. Because currently, following your all's advice, I have got 25% of my 401k in Vanguard Fed Money Market. I have 25% in the Oakmark Equity Income, 25% in Vanguard Institutional Index Fund, and 25% in the T. Rowe Price Institutional Growth.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. But they're going to give you more choices then. So you can reallocate this portfolio, but –
okay.
I would ask for all of the choices that are available to you for your investments, because it isn't certainly this one.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, you got to look at your figure out what all your options are, and you can call us back another time with all the options. But they have to have more options.
Yeah.
If not, talk to an attorney. I mean,
yeah.
There's just no way in 2019 that a plan is going to say we're getting rid of all of our options and we're going to give our all participants just one option.
They're not doing that.
It'd be foolish for them to.
So appreciate the call.
They'd be taking on liability without any sort of reason for doing it. They wouldn't be.
We're not getting the whole picture there.
Yeah. So anyway, figure that out, and we'll be happy to talk to you. And Pat, it is amazing how many people in the 401ks ignore things, and we'll see. This is not that uncommon where a company, they'll have a certain option, investment option. They get rid of it, and they give a new replacement.
Yes.
And they say, if you do nothing,
it's going to happen.
Yes. And sometimes they get rid of a fund, and the default is like a money market account.
Yes.
So it's like they say,
you have to look at it.
By the way, we're taking your money out of this investment. We're throwing it into just a interest-bearing account, unless you tell us otherwise, and it's surprising how many people do nothing. We see them because they come into our office.
Oftentimes years.
Years. They'll go years without making any changes.
You know, one of the things that people should really check on is their beneficiary designations. And I only bring that up because it happened this last week where I was talking to someone and their mother was in a nursing home and in hospice. And they're like, well, what do I do? I'm like, well, first thing I'd do is I'd make sure the trust was up to date, which you should have been doing a long time ago. And the beneficiary designations on any of the life insurance or IRAs or annuities.
And I tell you, where you really see it is after a divorce or second marriage.
Yes.
Or widowed.
Yes.
So I recall a few years ago, it was somebody that they had an adult child that passed away. And life insurance policy, the adult child had two grown children. So this person was, it was basically their grandkids that were now adult age-ish, right?
Yeah.
They were adulting, to turn my son through.
Adulting?
Adulting, I guess is the term.
Okay.
When a millennial like does some grown-up thing like
it's adulting.
Paying their rent or something.
Oh, it's an adulting. Adulting.
That's apparently a term. But so these, the adult child, not the grandchild, but
the adult child that passed away
had been divorced for 10 plus years.
Okay.
Beneficiary.
Ex-wife?
Ex-spouse. Yep. Not ex-wife, but ex-ex. Yep.
See it. See it all the time. That's why you want to check that stuff. You want to check that stuff. And it only comes to mind because I actually, this week, and it wasn't an account we manage because on a regular basis, we check that stuff and ask the client.
Yeah, but sometimes there's life insurance policies from a, maybe you're retired and you're part of your retirement.
You don't even know about it.
You've got a small retirement account there.
Yeah.
Or even through your current employer. So,
hey,
tax time is coming up pretty quickly, right?
Just
a few weeks from now.
April 15th. Good times.
If you, there's nothing wrong with filing an extension.
Nothing at all. It doesn't make you more likely to get audited.
Nope.
It doesn't, as long as you pay your estimated tax prior
to
April 15th.
So if you owe $2,000 on April 15th, you got to pay the $2,000 even if you do the estimate or not.
And if you overpay, then you just take that and you apply it to next year's taxes.
Or
you
get
a refund.
A refund when you do your taxes.
Yes.
And the reason, there's a few reasons why you might want to do an extension. First of all, accountants tend to be extremely busy this time of year.
Really busy.
Okay. So they're pretty dang busy. But oftentimes, you might not have all your paperwork together. If you invest in a private company, for example, the K-1s might not come out until
April 30th.
Or October 14th.
Yes.
I mean, not quite that bad, but later in the year. And an extension, you can, all you do is you file an extension and it pushes you out until October 15th. And sometimes you don't, your 1099s, you don't have them all together.
When was the last time you filed your taxes by April 15th, Scott?
20 years or so.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, and part of that was the driver was there is because I know accountants who do tax returns, and I would not want them doing my taxes.
Oh, I remember my mother-in-law would always, there's the post office would be up late. They'd always look for the late post office. And
really?
Yeah, drive to the post office on April 15th.
Is that right? I see those people on the news.
Those people. I'm sure there's some of our listeners maybe still do that. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, that's the deadline. At least we're all clear on the deadline. But nothing wrong with filing an extension.
I drove 30 miles across town and
now,
open till midnight.
If you're going to make an IRA contribution, you still have to do it by April 15th. As a matter of fact, if you file your taxes earlier, you have to do it by the time you file your taxes or April 15th. If you do an extension and you have a business, you can make your SEP IRA, assuming you do a SEP IRA.
The SEP contribution after April 15th to file your tax return. But the big thing this year is people that are actually doing a charitable contribution directly out of their IRAs.
The qualify, yeah. They had the required minimum distribution or some portion of it go directly to a charity.
The 1099s that are actually being sent out from most IRA custodians don't break that out. So if I had a required minimum distribution of $20,000 and $10,000 of it went to a charity and $10,000 that came to me, unless you point that out to your accountant, there's a good chance they would not know that.
Make sure you let them know.
Because
that's the big one, Pat, because there's millions of Americans that they had the requirement.
Okay. Are you enjoying making fun of me?
I don't need this money. Just give it to the charities. I am making fun of you. No, it's a great tool.
It's a great tool.
No question.
It's a great tool.
And many of our clients used it.
Especially because of the tax law changes last year.
Yeah. Anyway, we're taking a quick break. When we come back, we'll take some more calls. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit hansonmclean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you stick around for the second half of our program, because
normally the best half of the program. Absolutely. In fact, had you listened to the first half, you probably wasted your time.
It's that good?
It's going to be.
You could just tell already.
The energy. It's the energy. It's in the air.
Okay.
All right.
I'm not feeling that energetic today. I'm not bad, but I'm not quite like...
Okay.
It's not... Anyway, yeah, if you want to be part of the program, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to join us. 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's talk with Liz in Utah. Liz, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Liz. Thanks for calling.
Here's my question. My husband and I have been fortunate enough to save up a pretty good chunk of money in a brokerage account. We have about $250,000 to $300,000 sitting there. It's earmarked for our kids' education. We have two kids. One is a freshman, and one will be going off to school in 2020. And what I'm concerned about is where the money is sitting. Mm-hmm. It is in a brokerage account. It is rather aggressively sitting in there rather aggressively. And I'd like to get your ideas on best ways to kind of save that money a little bit, pull it out probably from the aggressive portfolio that it's in to something that's a little bit more moderate. And we can count on that to make those tuition payments when they come due.
So give me the ages of the children.
Freshman in high school and a senior in high school.
Okay. Is that right?
We've got a freshman in college, and we have
a
junior in high school.
Oh, junior in high school.
The one is finishing up his first year, and the next one will start in 2020.
All right.
So here's you call the right people, because we both have children recently graduated college, children in college, and Pat, you still have one in high school.
The letters that you're in, you're out, keep coming in, and we didn't make a major donation an institution that will allow for my youngest to go, nor was
we're not able to do that either.
Yeah, you know what was the most fascinating thing about all that stuff was the fact that the guy used the nonprofit to
story that came out a couple weeks ago,
yeah,
about the
college where they would bribe.
We interviewed that guy.
What do you mean interviewed?
Not you, my wife and I.
Oh, did you really? Oh, because he's from Sacramento.
Yes.
You interviewed about hiring him.
Yes. Not to have us cheat. He became a cheat. But something didn't smell right about that interviewing. That Stinger. Rick Stinger, whatever.
Ringer or Stinger? Stinger.
Whatever his name was. And it just... Because oftentimes in this day and age, it helps to have some ACT help and SAT prep, and then help with figuring out college stuff. This guy took it obviously too far and cheated on the whole thing.
But give him a little bit of credit for using a nonprofit.
He did. you could just tell something was
off. Which is, wait till the IRS gets a hold of these guys. Anyway, so back to you, Liz.
And Liz, did any of your children use any sort of college prep courses?
Yes.
Yeah, yep. It's pretty common. Because some of the articles made it sound like only the super wealthy use it, but it's pretty common for middle class families to use them.
So, Liz, I would take all of the dollars I needed for college and I'd bring them to cash.
I would as well.
100%.
Okay.
I wouldn't worry about any growth in them whatsoever.
So, I did. That's exactly what I did with my kids. One's a junior in high school. You could maybe make an argument for 80% to go to cash and to keep 20%.
You could.
But I did for both my children. And one of the benefits of, there's many benefits of getting older. Obviously, the physical part's not fun, but it's your own life experiences, right? And a very close family friend, matter of fact, the girl was a babysat our children when they were very young. And they were neighbors, and her dad, this is in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
1999.
I haven't heard this story, but I'm going to guess how it ends.
Daughter's about to go off to a private school, an expensive school, and he says, Scott, I've been fortunate enough, I think as you had put it too, Liz, that we've saved money. I've got enough money for her entire college, and it's done well for me because it's been in these stocks. What do you think I should do? And I said, well, for me, I'd cash it all out and put it in stocks.
Because you achieved the objective.
I mean, we always advise people, if you're going to own stocks, it's 5+ years. If you don't have at least 5+ years, the market cycles.
Did he take your advice?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
So because you've achieved your objective, Liz, chalk it up. You don't continue to run the race once you've went across the finish line.
Right.
And that's why I would bring it to cash. And I did exactly the same thing with my kids. Exactly. So if you want
would
some
you consider a bond ladder or a CD ladder?
So you could go, if you go to
get a high yield savings or money market account.
If you go to what's the name of that website?
Bankrate.com.
Bankrate.com. And this is how we did it. We put the money into a money market, high yield money market with a cash account attached to it that has check writing abilities. So if we need money, I go online and I sweep it out of the high yield money market into the checking account, all at the same institution, and write the checks out of it.
Okay, that's super convenient.
That's easy. And right now, you could get yields on there.
But Liz, feel good about this?
Two, three. And
we've just seen too many people. Who knows when the next downturn's coming? What we know historically, historically stocks decline 20% every 3 years. We go back long enough, but every 3 years, you have a 20% bear market.
And we haven't had that in.
We almost had it.
But we were
right
close.
Before Christmas, but we didn't.
Yeah, we haven't had that in 10 years.
And it would be horrible. Yeah. If you've got your kids in school and you watched your account fall by 30%, you're thinking, oh, crap, I had enough money.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So you've
got worth it. I was so good back then. Why didn't I do something?
Yeah. And if you want more equity exposure, do it somewhere else in your portfolio, like your 401k, where you actually have a longer timeline.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
And where is your child a freshman? What college?
ASU.
Very good. Very good.
And by the way, yes, there was some good fortune that came along, but also it's mostly hard work by you accumulating these dollars.
Yeah. For sure.
You didn't have some strange calamity that came from out of, you probably had normal life circumstances, my guess, and you worked hard and saved. That's how people accumulate wealth. So typically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if for the rest of the listeners, the only thing I would do is if I started earlier, I would have used a 529 plan.
Yeah, but
it doesn't matter now. But that's for the rest of
congrats,
the listeners.
Liz.
So appreciate the call.
I hope your kids.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Great show.
Yeah, thank you. I hope your kids do well in school.
And a 529 plan looks kind of similar to what she called a brokerage account. But once you put the money in, it grows tax deferred and it comes out tax free as long as you use the money for education. If you pull the money out and give it back to yourself, then taxes are due and a 10% penalty.
And I just drained my kids' 529 plans like a month ago.
For you didn't fully fund their education in the 529 plan.
My daughter, there was money left over after her 4-year university.
And you moved it.
And then she went to grad school. Oh. There went that. And then my son, I didn't have, his college choice was more expensive than I was budgeting.
So, but the 529 plan, you can change the beneficiary on it at any time. So your son or daughter could be well past the time that they
That's
graduated
correct.
From college.
Yeah, I'm going to wait until a grandkid comes
And you
along.
Can wait until the grandkid and move it off your son to your grandchild at any point in time.
And they do make for great long-term generation skipping.
Yeah, they really do. Kind of strange.
Under current law, but that's one of those. There are, you know, it's interesting. There's some loopholes that you'd think would be changed that aren't discussed at all. One of the biggies in the real estate industry.
Yes.
You can exchange one property for the other without ever paying a capital gain tax. So if I say, you know what, I think Facebook, I'd rather move my money from Google to Facebook.
You would pay a tax on that.
And one could argue they both are similar.
You would pay a tax.
Yeah, you couldn't sell Google and avoid your capital gains.
But if you were owned a building and wanted to buy a building across town, you could sell that and put it in
a new building.
In the 1035.
And you avoid all the taxes.
Yes.
It's deferred till later.
It's a 1035, not 1035.
Or 1031.
1031.
Then when you die, that capital gains is forgiven because your heirs receive it with what's called a stepped up basis.
Yeah. And you just borrow money out of the property the whole time in order to live.
That's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
Which is why they talk about Trump maybe didn't pay much in taxes.
Of course he didn't. Because he's a developer.
I know, and that is why in the tax reform, you didn't see anything happening.
It wasn't that he was Trump, that he didn't pay a lot of taxes.
Yeah.
He was a developer.
Well, they pay some taxes.
Well, not relative to their
yeah, most industries.
Yeah.
At the same kind of wealth accumulation.
They pay probably plenty of taxes, but not relative to that sort of wealth accumulation in many industries.
Not even close. All right, let's continue on. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number. Let's talk to Don in Sacramento. Don, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Don.
So I'm 5 years from retirement. I've been maxing out my 401k, like you suggested, and kind of watching the stock market. And I also have some money in an IRA. History has told me that, watching the rise and fall of real estate and other indicators, that the market's kind of peaking right now. And in the past, I've watched a lot of my friends make mistakes when they move their money. And a few of them did well when they put money in municipal bonds that were tax-free because it, it was a nice safe shelter and they were able to ride out the low. I have a 5 and 10 year horizon for two different types of money, but what are you suggesting right now as far as
what is your 5 year horizon? What are you going to be spending money in 5 years?
In 5 years, I plan to retire.
And what's the 10 years horizon?
But in 5 years, is that you're going to take a big chunk of money and buy a different home, or
no? In 5 years, I just won't. I will have a pension, a state pension. But it's 75% of what my income is now.
Okay.
In 10 to 15 years, I expect some of the money to dwindle that I've put aside, and I expect to start drawing on it at that time.
Got it.
So,
how much money do you have in your 401k and IRAs?
Let's see. I have about $50,000 in my 401k, and $20,000 in the IRA.
And how much money do you owe on your home, or do you owe in debt?
I owe $250 on my home. I have a 3.5% mortgage.
Okay.
And about 22 years left on the mortgage.
And how old are you, Don?
I'm 59.
And are you married?
Yes, I am.
Will your spouse have a pension as well?
No.
And will you have you contributed to Social Security? Will you receive Social Security as well?
Yes, I will.
Okay. So when you add in your when you calculate your pension at 75% of your income and Social Security, it's essentially replacing your pay will probably be greater than it is today.
That's correct. Because if you take a look at what you're paying in your Social Security taxes and your contribution into your 401k, and you take that out.
And the contribution to the pension.
So What we would worry about is the replacement of the wife's income or the spouse's income in this particular situation. And I think you should set your portfolio at probably 60% stock and 40% bonds and cash.
Municipal bonds, you can't, if you own municipal bonds inside of a retirement account, you're going to end up paying taxes on a tax-free instrument. So that,
yeah, that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Okay.
So it's the one way you end up paying taxes on tax-free income.
Yeah. So that people sometimes tell us they do that, and it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But in your portfolio, I don't think you should try to time the market.
No way.
I think that you should set a portfolio balance and try to keep it there in good and bad markets.
If you think about this, Don, your pension, think of your pen. How much will your pension be, ballpark?
I want to say it's about $6,500
okay. a month.
So you're looking at, you know, $75,000 a year pension. That would take, you know, $1.5 million, a couple million bucks
in fixed income. In bonds, in order to generate that.
So you can look at your portfolio. Let's call it $1.5 million. You can look at your portfolio. You've got $1.5 million in fixed income, and you've got $75,000 in savings. And you might as well have that a little more aggressively invested. And the challenge with trying to time the market, it's not just when to get out, but it's when you get back in.
Sure.
And if you look over long periods of times, The reason you get a higher return or you have historically by, say, owning either real estate or stocks, you know, real type assets, you end up, you get a higher return because of the ups and downs. Essentially, that's the compensation you receive for withstanding the swings in the portfolio.
It's a risk premium.
Yeah.
So in your situation, when you have a tendency to just focus on this $75,000,
think of that
monthly pension as being 100% fixed, and it's essentially you'd have to have, like Scott said, about $1.5 million in a bond portfolio to generate that kind of income. So I would have at a minimum 60% equities in that 401k and IRA. And it wouldn't even bother me if you had 90 or 100% equities, as long as you actually didn't change the allocation through an up or down market.
And worry more about what it's worth way down the road, not what it's worth tomorrow. So, hey, yeah. Don, appreciate the call. Wish you well. You know, it's interesting. State of California pension. If I were a recipient of a state of California pension, I would not then want to invest more in California municipal bonds.
That is correct, right? You've got enough exposure already to California.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Some of our clients that we have with let's say substantial municipal bond holdings that are residents of California, oftentimes we have some of the bonds outside of California, even though they're taxable as residents of California. It's just to make it just for diversification. You never know what's going to.
Yeah. And when you talk to your friends about the portfolios, it's kind of talking to the people. It's like fishing or gambling. They only talk about the good stuff. When you have people that gamble, they go, oh, yeah, I went to Vegas.
Come on, yeah, I never believe them.
Well, that's because they only talk about the good stuff.
Because you know the statistics.
That's right.
And sometimes people compare the stock market to gambling, but it's two totally different things.
Completely.
Companies, as long as our economies grow and companies continue to grow as a whole, it's a rising tide. It's different. You go to gamble and the house always gets a cut regardless.
Yeah. You know, so it's interesting. I ran into a friend I hadn't seen in a while and he said, man, that I ran into him recently. He said, man, it must be hard on you right now. I said, why? He says, well, all this market volatility. I'm like, so why is that hard? It's just, that's goes with the territory.
And let's continue. 1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. And we're going to Northern California, and we're going to talk with Ron. Ron, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, Pat and Scott. Thank you for taking my call today.
Thank you for calling, Ron.
I recently retired last year. I'm 61. I have about $2 million in assets, and I'm a little bit concerned about the market volatility. And I'm wondering about annuities. I know you guys don't like them, but I wanted to get your insight out of it. I talked to a couple of financial planners, and they're suggesting putting a large amount of money in annuities. So I lumped some of my pensions from a golden handshake.
So not that I hate annuities all the time or we hate annuities all the time. It's one of the products, it's so missold that the world would be better off if none of them existed.
But the reality is there are some annuities out there that make sense.
Correct.
And on occasion, rare occasion, we, our advisors at Hanson McLean may recommend, but when they do that, they talk about all the...
I think two or three clients in 2018.
But they talk about all the good and bad. So what did... Let's before you talk about the annuity that you have now, let me ask you a couple questions. You own a home, is that correct?
Yes, I own a home and own a rental property in Las Vegas.
And are they both paid for?
No.
What do you owe on your home, your primary residence?
$175,000, and the rental property, the rent, I get a positive cash flow. I owe about $70,000 on it.
And what's the interest rate on the primary residence?
I think it's 3.5%.
All right. And on the rental?
4.4%.
All right. And what's the value of both of those properties?
The primary is about $500,000, and the rentals are a little under $200,000.
And the $2 million, is that all in 401k or IRA or some on the outside?
About $1.6 million is qualified, meaning IRA and 401ks. And the other $400,000 is non-qualified, meaning stocks, bonds, and cash.
Did anyone recommend paying off the rental?
Yes, they did, because it would generate a considerable amount of income a month, and I'm thinking about doing
good.
That.
Good. That would be like...
That's just the first thing you do.
Yeah, it's a simple one.
Yeah.
Because you're at a time you want cash.
Will you receive or do you receive a monthly pension?
I do not. I lumped some of them out because I took early handshake at 55, and with some of the rules around it, if you didn't start taking it prior to 65 and happened to you, beneficiaries didn't get much, that kind of thing.
And are you married?
I am.
And will your wife receive a pension?
No.
Okay. So now tell us about the annuity they're recommending.
There's an alliance annuity where you defer income for, I think it's 10 years, and they give you a bonus for that. It's a variable annuity. I haven't bought any annuities yet.
Oh, got it. It's a variable annuity.
Yeah.
Maybe, or it's an equity index annuity because there's a bonus.
Yeah. So, but a variable annuity wouldn't be is your goal to get insulated pension type income from some of your investments, regardless of market conditions? Is that the goal of the annuity?
That's really the goal. I'm trying to clear about $120,000 after taxes a year and trying to come up with the right mix of things to accomplish that goal.
Got it. $120,000 after including Social Security, or $120,000 not including Social Security?
Including Social Security, of which I'm on Social Security disability, and I get about $3,000 a month right now.
So you said $2,000. How much will your wife get?
She'll get half of what I get, so $1,500.
Oh, you said you get $3,000 a month in Social Security. So we're trying to make up $9,000 a month on a $2 million asset, which is a 4.5% distribution.
No, it's a little higher than that. No, because it's $9,000 a month.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's over 5%.
Yep, I'm sorry. So your distribution, your reach for your distribution is possibly a little...
Maybe.
It could be a little high.
Yeah, he's got that's not factoring the rental. The rental's going to provide some income.
And oh, got it. There.
I'm not a big fan. So years ago, the variable annuity products that used to be around were much less expensive and had higher guarantees. We kind of liked them for the right circumstances back then, particularly for guaranteed income. In today's market, the internal cost, whether you see them or not, are really expensive. So, which is the reason we tend not to recommend those. What you could look into is what's called an immediate annuity. And this is where it's like, just think of it like buying a pension.
It's exactly the opposite of what you did when you took the lump sum.
Correct.
100% the opposite. Yeah. But it provides a couple things. One is it
guaranteed lifetime income
for both you and your spouse. So you get a joint with life. And you might take maybe, I don't know, quarter of your...
quarter, 15%, 20% of the portfolio.
And put it in there.
One could make an argument for that.
One could make an argument for actually just paying off the home, both of them, and getting rid of the payment... And that's a 3.3% return which is a little rough. If your interest rate was higher, it'd be much easier.
Yes.
It'd be much easier.
You get a higher return than that in an immediate lifetime annuity.
You would. But you're given a principal as well.
I don't think
the idea of using an annuity is a terrible idea. I don't know if the one that you're looking at is the right one.
Well, it's not the one we would recommend. And when you said the word bonus, I cringe.
You just cringe.
Because there's no such thing as a free lunch.
So what they're saying is,
right?
They're saying, we're going to give you a little extra if you keep it here for 10 years. You're like, well, if you could give it to me extra 10 years, why don't you give it to me now?
I heard an ad the other day. It was one of the cable providers, internet providers, and they talked about this sweet deal for the first 12 months if you sign a 24-month contract, right? That's what they said.
Right.
And we know what that's like. We've all felt that. You sign in, you get this bonus thing. Next thing you know, the rates go way up, but you have to sign so they give you a low introductory rate for the first year, but you're locked into a 2-year contract.
It's very similar to when I was a kid and I signed up for the Columbia Records in the Parade magazine.
I hadn't thought about those in a while. Right. How do you get these to stop?
Where I paid $1 for 10 records. And then they continued to send them to my parents' home for the next 4 years. Same thing. Not exactly.
I got to tell you.
Anything that comes with bonus like that,
I just think it's trickery.
Yeah, we just...
It doesn't sit well with me.
It doesn't.
It's dirty.
So I would explore... Dishonest. Ron, you could explore the use of an immediate annuity, but it wouldn't be this one.
Yeah.
Okay. So
appreciate the call.
Yeah, but you're thinking along the right kind of...
But so most certainly pay off that...
rental, number one. Yeah, number property. One. And unfortunately, we are running short of time as always. But hey, remind you, on our website at hansonmclain.com, we've got some great tools. We've got our whole learning library. We've got guides on there that deal with retirement planning, like what are things to think about or how to select an advisor, that sort of thing. We've got online tutorials, which tend to be 20 to 30 minute online lessons that are available, like on Social Security. And we got articles, podcasts, etc. And you can sign up for our newsletter, all at hansonmclain.com. We're out of time. You can also visit one of our advisors.
You can always do that.
We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLain.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLain Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.